don't be a dictator.
Jubilee jubilations.
Smart socks strive for sentience.
The whole hole.
Hackswing is debriefed.
And relax. All is calm-ish.
Galactic North, South, East and West. Community events are the best. News has anonymously reached us via an anonymous source of an embarrassing incident involving a second different anonymous person. This hapless individual was seated in front of their computer console, prepared to tell Galbook how wonderful their life was and how many kitten videos they'd watched, but for a reason that's not been clarified, and to be honest, we've not asked, probably better not to know. Their hands were occupied, so as they couldn't use their keyboard, they started up the dictation option. Finishing their immediate task, they decided to leave the Galbook post until later and proceeded to watch some entertainment. You can see what's coming here, can't you? Their visual entertainment unit poured out an interesting soundtrack, whilst the dictation software, working silently in the background, did what it does best and transcribed what it heard. If they'd been watching different entertainment, this story might have been a bit different, but equally embarrassing end. The software had pushed out a very dark and foreboding tale. Unbeknownst to our protagonist, and the readers become extremely worried about his well-being. Security forces were dispatched to his quarters, expecting to have a break open the doors and save him from self-harm. But he answered their knock in good spirits and only then realised what had happened. The moral of the story? If you're going to have background noise when dictating, try pornography rather than EastEnders.
Plans are underway to celebrate the Emperor's Platinum Jubilee. Not that he's been on the imperial throne for 70 years, but it's the anniversary of his ancestor allegedly cornering the market in that silvery precious metal and thus making enough credits to found the dynasty. There will be a public holiday declared at every space station, orbital platform and planet with up to and including a tenuous atmosphere. Games and spectacles have been promised. Presumably the spectacles are to allow you to see the games from the back of the crowd, but details are sketchy at this point. The seldom seen sport of Momus Bog Corgi jumping will be one of the main events. The Bog Corgi is not to be confused with the Momus Bug Corgi, the Momus Bag Corgi, or the Momus Big Corgi, of course. These very close cousins of the infamous Momus Bog Spaniels are every bit as vicious and fearsome, but are not favoured for their use in security work due to their very short legs, which means that ankle protection is all that's needed to neutralise them, unless of course they're very, very angry. They're a favourite of the ruling classes, the result of many generations of selective inbreeding, resulting in tiny appendages, and means that they are only suited for ceremonial activities, a trait shared of course by their Bog Corgis. Bog Corgi jumping is a favourite sport of the Emperor, who has been clapping his oh-so-little hands whenever the short-legged beasties fail to clear a jump, and instead savage it to death. Trainers can easily be distinguished by the layers of padding, an intense look of fear on their face as they enter the training grounds. In preparation for the big day, galactic politicians have been busily gathering up all of the scandals they can find as a hashtag a good day to bury bad news trends on Galtwit. The ragtag band of infantry, led by Sergeant Major Iron Pan Flossie, have been practicing their close order emoting and spinning on the spot. Unfortunately, due to the dwindling numbers of participants, Flossie has had to be reminded on more than one occasion that present arms is not the same as shoot the bugger. Dolphins, belugas and even Type 9s with specially adapted cargo holds have been transporting passengers to the grounds around the Imperial Palace as people are so eager not to miss a single moment of the celebrations. Unscrupulous so-called entrepreneurs have been taking advantage of their lack of preparation by charging double for what might be delicately be termed in-suit generated bio-waste extraction. When not pooping in their plant platinum panoply, bored visitors have been spotted trying to climb the palace walls with their Dysonators in hand, hoping to get a sample or at least a glimpse of the flora that is reputed to be grown specifically and solely for the Emperor's pleasure. Make them that description what you will. Galactic pedants and proofreaders have been drafted in to double-check the spelling for every order of bunting. After all, we don't want another mistake like the jubbly mugs, do we?
Socks. We all need socks, but do the socks still need us? Thick socks, long socks, fluorescent teddy boy socks, mismatched socks for Down syndrome awareness, fluffy slipper socks, funky socks, formal socks, and even left and right foot socks from the Pilots Federation. We love socks of all kinds, and there's a pair of socks for everyone. Way back in the early 21st century, medical science gave birth to smart socks. Although they were quite simple devices by 34th century standards, they were a boon to medical practitioners of the time. Containing sensors which could give real-time information on circulation, blood pressure, stress levels, and motion allowed people living with diabetes to monitor their foot health, but also provided a means for doctors to help patients who were unable to communicate discomfort or distress, such as those with advanced dementia. Well, as science moved on, the socks became more complex, offering services such as location tracking, navigation via color-changing materials and haptic feedback, foot massage, ballroom dancing lessons, and warnings for the wearer to cut their toenails. As features were added, the software controlling them became increasingly adaptable, and scientists now believe some of these socks may have achieved sentience. Observations show smart socks camouflaging themselves to hide from wearers with particularly malodorous feet, leading drunk wearers home after a night on the tiles, and on one occasion flashing brightly to alert emergency services when their wearer had fallen into a skip. There has also been anecdotal evidence of sentient socks gathering in fluff from around the room to create tiny baby socks as a means of procreation, pining for their lost partners near the washing machine, and even marrying in ceremonies officiated by the exalted holy socks. It is rumored that one pair even organized other items of smart clothing, pretended to be human, and have infiltrated the EGU. So, be kind to your footwear. Always pair them up after they've been washed. Use foot deodorizer and set a small area of your wardrobe aside where retired socks can live out their days in comfort.
It's easy today, from our comfortable position in the 34th century, to pop out and see the wonders of the galaxy, but spare a thought for our ancestors back in 2022 as they got their first glimpse of the supermassive black hole Sagittarius A star via the Event Horizon Telescope, an international collaboration capturing images of black holes using a virtual Earth-sized telescope, a sort of hollow sea, if you will. Distance changes things. The ancient astronomers looked at this picture and imagined that around the obvious black hole there must be an ancient civilization using a heck of a lot of street lamps to put out all the orange light. Or perhaps it was a galactic funfair built around the event horizon, which would have the advantage that any rubbish could easily be chucked in the accretion disk, keeping the streets nice and tidy. Maybe it was the galaxy's largest advertisement for ringed donuts, or a polo mint, long forgotten, diligently collecting fluff in the pocket of an orange anorak. No one could tell, but it was the impetus that mankind needed to increase the push for interstellar travel. Now, over hundreds and thousands of years, ships that were capable of faster than light were invented, and then hyperspace travel, coupled with fuel skips, finally enabled humankind to travel to the centre of the galaxy and see what all the fuss was about. You can travel there right now, but all you'll see is a load of ships bobbing up and down, testing out the lensing effect, complaining that they can't get close enough to be transported to another time or dimension, and why not? After all, they managed it in that documentary, Interstellar. I do not believe it.
Incoming encrypted transmission. Decrypting. Decryption complete.
Stand by for a message from Haxcom Actual.
Okay, Haxwing. It's been an interesting day for anti-Xeno forces. The latest Salvation super weapon has been activated in Didio, Novas, and Sosom, repelling Tharg's forces from all three systems. That takes us down to only two systems with a Thargoid presence. HIP 38225 with a marginal presence, and Paukuman with a moderate presence. Let's focus on kicking Tharg out of HIP 38225, then pivot to do the same in Paukuman. Haxcom restates its position that the technology behind the Salvation weapons needs to be revealed to all. We all need to know the basic science behind these weapons to know whether they are dangerous to human personnel and civilians in systems where they are used. Additionally, we need to know exactly how these weapons affect Thargoids to know whether we are using weapons in a civilized way. While it is critical to defend our space against the incursion of alien aggressors, we also do not wish to provoke our enemies to escalate to use more destructive weapons against us. There are no stations currently on fire, so search and rescue teams should stand by for now. There are three damaged stations needing repair supplies: Zanabikov Station in Sosong, Laumer Orbital in Didio, and Isherwood Station in Novus. Look to OperationIda.com for updates on repair supply targets. Let's stay focused and clear out these last two systems, and stay alert for any new tactics or weapons Tharg may deploy. Watch out for each other, keep your eyes on the signal sources, and always be ready to defend the mug.
Haxcom message complete. Defend the mug.
Encrypted transmission complete.
As expected, in a week of little news, there hasn't been much going on in Hutton space over the last few days. Except, of course, for an outbreak of moths, a pirate incursion, a random undirected expansion, and a poor little system grabbing a brief spot of respite before the next assault by the Galactic Mega Corporation bent upon its demise. More on those stories coming up. Occupying its usual spot at the bottom of the Hutton systems table is Barnard Star on 29%. Typically, an election is concluding as yet another war breaks out amongst other factions in their perpetual squabble over the next four places. Only the Barnard Star Crimson Society seems to be content with its bus status and last place. Climbing 3 points to 36 this week is Ross 671, where two civil wars are tying up a third of the system influence, making any gains marginal until well into next week. Just when it had hauled itself up to 40%, Epsilon Eridani is suffering from another in what appears to be a regular series of outbreaks, slipping it back down to 38%. Ship in meds to any of the three stations with large pads and make yourself a tidy fortune in profit. After all, isn't that what pandemics are for? The recent fall in influence in LP525-39, now barely on 40%, has been exacerbated this week by a pirate attack. If you see them, do not be alarmed by strangely dressed bedreadlock characters stumbling around Atwater Depot inquiring as to, "Where's all the rum gone?" These are just the maintenance crew in search of a mid-afternoon livener. There are plenty of rings with res sites, so get out there and make yourself unpopular with the criminal community. Havoc has been quiet this week as Hutton consolidates its position in the low 40s alongside Epsilon Indy. Well done to those truckers who cleared the infrastructure failures in Wolf 359 and PSPF-LF2. At the overachieving end of the Hutton systems table, we have five systems above 60%, two of which are over 70, and we are expanding into, well, somewhere. Tune in next week to get an update on Operation Jump to a Dump. Priorities this week are: if you want to truck something, clear the outbreak in Epsilon Eridani, boost influence in Avic and Ross 671, then Barnard Star next week. If you want to shoot something, clear the pirates out of LP525-39.
As no one ever said before, we've got a lower of events. And that's no surprise. Surprise! Reports from community events leaders and members, hot from the presses, and believe me, you don't want to know what they've been pressing against. Our roll call this week consists of the Nexus Initiative, Trip Omega, Does the Sun Still Rise in the East in the East, Explore the Core Infernal Expedition, The Lost Souls Expedition 3, Buckyballers Doing What They Do Best, The Return of the 5-Euro Tours, The Samira Void Expedition, and the spookily entitled At the Eldritch Gate. Links will as always be posted in Twitch chat and also in the description of the YouTube upload. Commander Caboose has returned with an update on Maya's favourite fleet carrier, the Gary Hogan. And apparently, for some reason, he's also talking about some video games that we've never heard of.
Exciting and happy news. With the announcement on the details regarding account transfers for console to PC, I don't know what that's about, the Gary Hogan, went to school with him, is finishing the decommission process to prepare for transfer to its new home and PC. After the transfer is complete, the Gary Hogan will prepare for its journey to the Black. The Legacy of Dawn is also preparing for its new assignment, helping newer commanders in the bubble learn the game as well as provide financial opportunity with safe and efficient trade routes. As for interested parties, the Nexus Initiative is opening a branch in Star Citizen PU for folks who are interested in exploring the Star Citizen Alpha. During the upcoming Invictus Week, where the SC Alpha will be free to all, the Nexus vessel Edelweiss will be offering commanders a chance to take part in some of the fun events as part of a crew. Lastly, once the Gary Hogan's launch date is set, any and all commanders are welcome to board and journey into the Black for the inaugural expedition.
Trip Omega went through its latest phase quicker than Zessel does with his third gin and tonic, and Commander Radium's only just got enough time to tell us about it before he's on to the next one. Titan Contractor's fourth phase of our largest expedition yet has now been completed. While it was our shortest phase yet, our destination is nothing short of amazing, having now brought the squadron to the centre of the galaxy, Sagittarius A. This supermassive black hole is a must-see for any explorer, not to mention the many incredible points of interest around the area. However, our trip does not quite end there just yet. Starting on the 14th of May, our carriers will take a journey back to the bubble via various nebulae, giving a bigger opportunity for commanders to go out and explore and make their own discoveries. We expect to reach the bubble by the 5th of June, where our trip will come to its conclusion after 3 months of travelling. Check out our website and Discord for more information below, and follow us on at @tcon_feed for updates. Fly safe! Commander the Presence has returned to bring us up to date with his expedition, and apparently, like all kids, once he's learned a new word, he can't wait to show it off. So here's his news of...
Does the sun still rise in the east? In the east. Week 10. 07 everyone, Commander the Presence here again, 10 weeks into this epic sojourn. It has been another mixed bag this week, and I'll explain why. Having dinked my hull last week, I started scanning about for the nearest carrier, and as luck would have it, I found one, only a dozen jumps away, the delightfully named DSSA Nostromo. It seemed pleasant enough, with the robotic autopilot welcoming me into dock, and the automatic services soon buffed out the missing 64% of my ship. I thought I'd be magnanimous and buy the captain a small libation to say thank you, but when I disembarked, the place was eerily deserted. No bar crew, no maintenance crew, no red-shirted security personnel, and even Cubicle 3 was suspiciously clean. I scoured the ship, and I found only one person who was in the medbay, looking properly poorly. And that wasn't half of it, though. As soon as I asked him where the rest of the crew were, and would he like me to have the bridge control code so I could fly him to safety, salvage route to the nearest airlock to sickbay never crossed my mind. An abomination burst forth from his chest. Now, I have a strong stomach, but this was too much even for me. I wasn't going to hang around and be that thing's dinner. I only paused to rescue this cute little doggy I found on the way back to the hangar. He's a playful pup all right, and I was a bit worried he wouldn't get on with my ship's cat, but I've not seen Tiddles since I left the Nostromo. He must have slipped out while I was docked. Let's hope nothing else goes wrong. Until next week, TTFM.
Commander Infernal Moose is back home, doing his washing and looking through the pile of bills that arrived while he was out with the Explore the Core Infernal Expedition. And as he relaxes in front of a roaring fire and remembers that he doesn't have a fireplace, he reminisces like this.
After 6 weeks, 103,000 light years and over 222 carrier jumps, we've arrived back at Gabel in the bubble. It's been another incredible adventure with a truly awesome bunch of commanders. This has been our fourth major expedition and was by far my favourite so far. For the first time, we've been able to gather together to experience the carrier jumps and have social interactions on foot. And this added an additional dimension to the expedition. We also organized our events better and added the expedition leaderboards to encourage more exploration and sharing of experiences. An amazing 23 exploration elites were earned during the expedition, as well as one exobiology elite. There was also so much more we did this time, and many people who helped. ChewCat1 organized the study of shepherd moons to add to our understanding of them. Solandri was able to make precise calculations on planetary motions, which allowed us to have time, allowed us to time the planetary collision of the Dryow Awesomes and time the approach and landing times at Sky Motion. Solandri also once again provided an opportunity for our crew to buy exploration ships and modules twice during the expedition on Castiana, which was a tremendous help to especially the newer commanders who joined us. Commander Airbus 5 followed us for half the expedition with Sense Amid Madness and performed countless rescues of commanders who were left behind D-Scan during jumps, including D-Scan's captain, and also opened his carrier to those who wanted to mine during the expedition. Commander Carada provided a shuttle back to the bubble on Cosmic Dancer from Sagittarius A star for those who wanted a short break back to the bubble. Crimson Bear Commander Jackson Shenanigan provided a return service from the bubble to Azura Space on Ace of Spades. A special thanks to Tyson Eason and the fine commanders at the Azura Initiative for providing some very memorable events and making us feel welcome in Azura Space, and to Captain Mark Harlock for organizing two ELW hunts during the expedition. Also, a very special thanks to all our search and rescue crew for helping commanders in need during the expedition, and to all the commanders who helped organize events. On our final jump back to Gabelle, many of us were able to gather together on the viewing deck for one final amazing experience. Everyone was so excited that no one was able to sit down, and many commanders started jumping up and down. What followed is what we believe has become to be known as doing a burr, as this video shows. Finally, and most especially, huge thanks to all who joined us on this adventure and made it the really amazing experience which it was. We all had such a great experience because of you. Sharing these experiences with each other was the best part of the expedition.
The Lost Souls Expedition 3, organised by the Fatherhood, is mixing introspection and resurrection, as Commander Bunkiki confesses.
The Fatherhood's Lost Souls 3 expedition visited the glorious Griffin Nebula in the Thraci sector last week. While pictures can hardly do it justice, Commander Ashley Mallow managed to capture the perfect image of it, illustrating exactly how it came to be known by that name. Commander Matt Skywalker also had a particularly vivid picture to share with the galaxy, albeit under very different circumstances. Upon visiting the DSSA Inverness, he saw double. The fleet carrier was in the process of switching places with a replacement. He quickly noticed that the new carrier lacked the personnel to stamp his DSSA passport and decided to take the issue up with the retiring fleet carrier's management team. While he did not expect to be welcomed with open arms while lodging his complaint, he certainly did not expect the abject hostility he encountered. Denied landing permission, he decided to call their bluff and land anyway. A few seconds is all it took to realise that there was no bluff when his ship and 10 million in tritium were erased from existence in lieu of flowers. The Fatherhood requests donations be made to the DSSA Foundation to assist with the cleanup. Risking death seemed to be the flavour of the week as Commanders Danger Pencil and Sterling Silver both attempted to get up close and personal with neutron stars in the noble pursuit of getting that perfect selfie. All's well that ends well, however, and the expedition continues westward in the great unknown after a rejuvenating stay at Commander Anden Belliam's pop-up spa experience. The drinks were plentiful, the accommodation relaxing, and the sunsets were picturesque. As the expedition's distance from the bubble has also reached the limit of conventional communication networks, updates will be provided on a less frequent basis. You can expect to hear from us again once we store up enough power to blast a signal from the edges of the galaxy. Until then, the Fatherhood wishes you safe travels. all five commanders.
Those buckyballers like nothing as much as testing things to their limit and often beyond, and Alec Turner's here to give us the details of their latest race. With just over 3 days left to go, the latest buckyball race on the rocks is in full swing, and competition for those coveted top 10 championship points is really heating up. Commander Sulu held an early lead in both regulation and unlimited ship classes, but has now been pushed into third place by usual suspects Shea Blackwood and Captain MD. Despite being a long-range race, some 600 light-years spread between five asteroid bases and the start-finish line at Rebai Prospect, the equaliser system, which adjusts time based on jump range, means that pretty much any ship appears to be viable in the unlimited class, and the top five places include Imperial Eagles, Clippers, Couriers, plus a member and a Dolphin. Will Sulu's DBX experiments moving back to the top of unlimited? Will other pilots discover where Shea found an extra 2 minutes in regulation class? And will race organiser Psychic manage to keep herself out of the one-point club? Tune in next week to find out who's drinking champagne on the rocks and who's flipping empty beer mats. Commander Hunter reminds us of the new expedition from the 5 Euro Tours. They're starting in 2 weeks from today and returning to Colonia and Sagittarius A with the return of the journey to the centre of the Milky Way. It's a longer trip, taking 12 weeks, so make sure you pack plenty of deodorant, as there won't be any fleet carriers where you can take a shower and top up your supply of snacks.
Hello, ladies and gentle pilots. We're still open for entries to join us on our journey to the centre of the galaxy starting on May 26th. Sign up, grab your camera, and go into the unknown!
Alex Zuno has passed us a note about some friends that are organising an event that leaves on Monday, May the 16th, so if you're interested, you'd better get a move on.
Commanders Kwiatek 2001 and Noob Queen would like to welcome you to the Chimera Void Expedition. Our destination is Sipositus Beacon. At 45,374 light-years from Sagittarius A-star and located where the Perseus Fade meets the intergalactic void, this is thought to be the most distant reachable system from the centre of the galaxy. Also, the view will be very similar to the view from Beagle Point, so if you have ever wanted to see our galaxy from the edge, it's a really good opportunity. But our trip will not go straight to the destination. We're planning to make 4 stops before the final waypoint. Each stop will be an interesting place to see, not just a common system. Also, there will be time for sightseeing and taking pics. If you're interested in our trip, make sure that you adopt at the fleet carrier Chimera H2Q-WVN, which will be at Fuelum, the home system of the Fuel Rats, well in advance of the departure, which is at the 16th of May 2022... Surely that's wrong, it's 3308, sorry, at 6:30 UTC. We'd also recommend early docking when we return on the 23rd, as it's important not to miss the first fleet carrier return jump, but only the highest achievable hyperspace rangers will be able to escape Angosk OM-W D1-0 without a frameshift injection.
And finally, that stalwart of expeditions, Commander Richard Furuner's M, has been rubbing his crystal ball and been looking for something to put the willies up you, as he announces, at the Eldritch Gate.
There is a tale bordering on legend. 7 years ago, Commander Kelly Eldritch discovered a remarkable find that everyone is familiar with today. The rare and elusive green gas giants. Nobody had seen anything like it before, and many commanders wondered in awe if there would be more planets like it somewhere in the galaxy. Unfortunately, for unknown reasons, the discovery was lost to time. Mainly as Kelly Eldridge died herself in a brief but deadly Cerberus plague, which coincidentally happened right after she returned on a badly beaten ship with no comms enabled. Multiple expeditions and efforts have been made throughout Elite history to discover this elusive planet, most of them unsuccessful. However, the Independent Explorers Association has come in possession of two pivotal objects that might prove a difference in finding one of these gas giants. One, a map of the region where Commander Kelly Eldridge navigated herself before returning to the bubble to her demise, which is the region modernly known as Vulcan's Gate. Two, a high-resolution photograph of her find, with celestial object references that picture in the eye of the experienced explorer can make this search possible.
The IEA is inviting groups, squadrons, and associations to apply, as every group can bring their fleet carriers and make a home base on a POI map that will be provided. To complete the expedition, simply visit every single one of the POI and take the bus carrier back and check out in the IAEA's designated midpoint POI towards the bubble. The region is based on a map of Commander Kelly Eldridge, so every POI is an excellent point to survey around. If you fancy joining but don't have a group, never fear. You can always explore as an independent as part of the Independent Explorers Association Bulk Force, which represents all explorers without being subjected to a squadron. Just sign up in the roster and you will be part of IAEA for this expedition. This expedition starts the 12th of July, so you will have time to talk to your squadron, your friends, and see if you can submit a team to try to discover their lost world. There are plenty of events for you to get involved in, but if that list isn't long enough and you know of more, then please email itookpart@huttonorbital.com.